Buon après-midi. Buenas tardes. Good afternoon, everybody. Be welcome to this Migration and Asylum Europe second high-level interparliamentary conference on migration and asylum. As chair of the Committee of Liberties, Justice and Home Affairs, called Libe Committee, it's my privilege and my honor to chair, together with my Portuguese colleague, Edith Estrela, good friend of mine, good old friend of this house, and mine particularly, to this second session of the second high-level interparliamentary conference on migration and asylum. Glad to welcome Eduardo Cabrita, Minister for Home Affairs, on behalf of the Portuguese Presidency of the Council of the European Union, and Detlef Seif, member of the Committee of Internal Affairs and Community of the German Bundestag. Thanks to our speakers for being with us today. We also are to hear a testimony by the organization Operazione Colomba, non-violent Peace Corps of the Pope John XXIII, operating with volunteers, international support of victims, armed conflict, promoting dialogue and reconciliation. Second session about the external dimension of migration and asylum policies. First, external dimension has become, obviously, an overwhelming issue in the EU policies of migration and asylum. In this context, new Pact on Asylum and Migration is putting a great emphasis on international cooperation with partner countries based on the principle of mutually beneficial and tailor-made partnerships involving all relevant EU policies such as development, education, employment, visa policies, taking fully into account the EU values we as EU share, cherish, and want to safeguard. The European Parliament, this European Parliament, has always consistently pledged for a holistic and comprehensive approach to asylum and migration. What do we understand by holistic? An approach that combines both internal and external dimension of migration and asylum policies, which are linked and intertwined as policies and as lawmaking issues particularly. That is why in our Libe and FEM report adopted in February this year, we pointed out that it's key to prevent and fight against smuggling and trafficking human beings in our cooperation with third countries, either of origin or transit. Equally key is this cooperation in the protection of victims, ensuring comprehensive support, reintegration and rehabilitation programs. I would like to recall that children in migration in particular, unaccompanied and separate migrant children, are continue to be at high risk of violence along migration routes. We must, together with our partner countries outside the European Union, do whatever at hand we can do to stop this criminal business model of smugglers leading to suffering, immense suffering, and a heavy death toll in the seas. But this action should go also hand in hand with the creation safe and legal migration pathways, as we have recalled and insisted so many times before. Migration pathways to the European Union for asylum seekers, which are by nature particularly vulnerable group of migrants. We have an EU resettlement scheme which has gone quite a way into its negotiations to reach an agreement between the Council and the European Parliament, but not yet. It is about time that we conclude this file and adopt it as soon as possible. It'll help us finding mutually beneficial partnerships with third countries and manage our migration flows. We also need to build on legal labor-related channels to the European Union. That will again cut the road for criminal networks to operate A comprehensive set of legal instruments will improve access for third country nationals to the EU labor market, encourage more orderly migration at our borders. Students, business, labor markets do need them. Ensuring that third country national workers are treated in accordance with fundamental rights, improve access to decent working, decent job conditions. Such holistic approach, as we call it, will be to the benefit of third country national workers, their families, the host communities, and home countries. That is why a major step is to be made by the recent agreement reached between the European Parliament and the Council under the Portuguese presidency, Blue Card Directive. Let's now proceed with new instruments announced by the Commission, such as the revision of the Single Permit Directive. But before we enter into our debate this afternoon, let me give the floor to my dear colleague and co-chair of this panel, Edith Estrela, Vice President of the Portuguese Assembleia da República, for her introduction to this second session today. Edith, the word is yours. Floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Juan Fernando. Dear friend, it's a pleasure to see you again and to share this task with you. Let me start by welcoming Eduardo Cabrita, Minister of Home Affairs of Portugal, who is with us here in Lisbon. And I would also like to welcome Detlef Seif, Member of the Committee on Internal Affairs and Community of the German Bundestag. This conference is started during the German presidency, and we welcome the opportunity to have a German MP with us to share our trial partners' insights on the current state of play. Dear colleagues, I will make my statement brief in order to give more time to our distinguished speakers. 8 months after the new pact on asylum and migration was presented by the European Commission, and half a year since our last high-level conference on these topics, we have seen concrete progress, particularly on the external dimension. This now seems to be a broad consensus by working towards establishing proactive relationships with other countries that include all dimensions of migration flow management, while also creating or upscaling existing migration mechanisms, Europe can bolster its resilience and strike a new balance between responsibility and solidarity. One such example is the recent agreement on the Blue Card Directive that will make it easier and more attractive for highly skilled third country nationals to come and work in the EU. The potential benefits are evident. Europe's business and universities will be more competitive, placing them on an equal footing with entities from other countries who also seek to attract highly skilled talent. This agreement further shows that consensus on these issues can indeed be reached, and we hope that with this debate, parliamentarians will contribute in a meaningful way to this important discussion. I share with my friend Juan Fernando the hope that work on other initiatives will move forward at an upbeat pace. As the COVID-19 pandemic dies down, and migration pressures increase, Europe urgently needs these instruments to provide an adequate response. Let us always remember that migration and asylum policies are a shared competence between the Union and its member states, and that Europe's fundamental values must be at the core of all policy decisions, be they internal or in relation to our neighboring countries. These are the same values that define us and the reason why so many seek Europe for protection, for work, and for raising their families. With that, dear friends, I give the floor to Mr. Eduardo Cabrita, Minister of for Home Affairs, on behalf of the Portuguese Presidency of the Council of the European Union. Dear friend, you have the floor for 10 minutes.
Thank you, my dear friend, Vice President of the Portuguese Parliament, Edith Estrela. Thank you, co-chair, my dear friend, Juan Fernando López Aguilar, chairman of the LIBE committee in the European Parliament. It is a honor for me to be in the Parliament as an old parliamentarian in this parliamentarian dimension of the European Portuguese presidency of the Council. And let me, in this seminar, develop how we can say the external dimension of migration is a priority pillar in the approach the Portuguese presidency adopted during these 6 months. As you know, the European Commission presented last September its proposal on the new pact on asylum and migration. And as we clearly saw on the first weeks of debate, this is one of perhaps most challenging issues we are facing at the European level. We should address a problem that is a critical issue and a problem that splits member countries among different views on this problem. For the Portuguese presidency, it's very clear, migration is not a threat. Migration is a natural phenomenon in the history of Europe. Europe is made of migrants coming from everywhere. Europeans were all around the world through history, and Portuguese and Spanish, like you, have the experience of being abroad all around the world. That's why we should look to migration not in the unprepared way Europe addressed this issue on the 2015 or 2016 crisis, but on a completely new and holistic and coordinated approach. And that is the main first importance of this holistic and global new pact on asylum and migration. We should look in a long-term approach that Europe needs migrants. Europe needs the positive impulse of people coming from other continents. We are an aging continent, and that's quite clear when we look to the negative natural balance we had and to the low fertility rates we have in the majority of European countries. Africa, our closest neighbor, is the youngest continent in the world. That's why we said that during our presidency, we should try to reach compromise and to narrow the gaps among member states. That gives us an approach giving support to all the technical work which developed in a very positive way on all the areas and technical work, and to choose three main political issues that should be addressed. That's what we said on our first informal ministers' meeting and also on our first debate with the European Parliament in January. These three political central issues are the external dimension of migrations, how to share responsibility on the common managing of our common borders, and how to share solidarity, saying that migration is not a frontline members' problem, is a all European problem. And having the support to this approach, we gave strong priority to the creation of legal pathways to migration, legal migration, coordinated migration, cooperation with our neighbors, especially in North Africa and in the whole African continent, on the management of migratory flows, is the only way to fight against smuggling, to fight against trafficking of human beings, to fight against the use of the most fragile people leave them from the hands of criminal organizations. Last March, we held a Jumbo Council, which was an historical council in this area. For the first time, 54 ministers of foreign affairs and home affairs gathered to discuss the external dimension of migrations. And there was a broad political agreement between the ministers, between the Council and the European Commission on to have a global approach in the partnerships with neighbor countries. We should look to countries in Northern Africa as countries that are at the same time countries of origin, countries of transit, and countries of destiny of migrants. And we should work together, and we should develop the partnerships with countries that are in the front line to work with Europe in this issue. The examples of cooperation with countries like Tunisia or Morocco or Mauritania are good examples in this way. Secondly, we proposed a new impulse to the development of legal ways to migration. And it was very positive to have adopted after three years of freezing for political reasons, to have adopted the blue card regulation by the European Parliament. Also, it was very positive that last Friday we launched with Commissioner Ylva Johansson and Vice President Margarita Skinas the new talent partnership with the neighbor countries. Last May, we held in our presidency also an important conference with the North African countries on the management of migratory flows. From Egypt to Senegal, we had in this conference some at face-to-face, others by video conference. We had all governments from Egypt to Senegal. Also, we had Niger and the African Union working with us on this proposal. That's why last week, in the last Council of Home Affairs Ministers, was also very positive that we could go ahead of the package approach that some countries are taking on the discussion of the Pact on Asylum of Migration. We could go ahead with the agreement on the EASO regulation. We had a political agreement from the MED5 countries on the adoption of the new EASA regulation, which is very important. Also, it is positive the developments we have reached on the Eurodac or on the screening regulation. We intend, is important, to have national parliaments and the European Parliament with us in this approach. We think we should look for this area as perhaps the most important test for Europe and for as an area of freedom, justice and security, and to a relation based on the respect from fundamental rights in our approach, in our relation with our neighbors. That's why it's so important we may develop a common approach that defends the idea of strong and united defense of our common borders, and that means common borders means that migration is not a problem for Greece in Greek islands, for Spain in Ceuta, or for Lithuania towards Belarus. It's a global European problem. Also, solidarity among European members. But join migration issues with development approach. When we are investing in the education of young girls in Africa, or supporting vaccination in Africa, we are working to prevent illegal migration. We are working to a future of cooperation. That's Portuguese presidency approach in line with the best of European values. Thank you, Chairwoman and Chairman.
Thank you so much, Minister. And now I will give the floor to Detlef Seif, member of the Committee on Internal Affairs and Community of the German Bundestag. You have the floor for 10 minutes, please.
Ja, vielen Dank. Sehr geehrte Vorsitzende, sehr geehrter Herr Innenminister Cabrita, Eure Exzellenzen, sehr geehrte Damen und Herren, liebe Kollegen. Seit rund 10 Jahren bearbeite ich als Berichterstatter und Mitglied des Deutschen Bundestages das Thema Asyl- und Migrationspolitik, zunächst im EU-Ausschuss und jetzt parallel auch im Innenausschuss. Oft hörte ich in den zurückliegenden Jahren von Fortschritten, Strategien, ganzheitlichen Ansätzen und Lösungen. Es gibt viele gute Ansätze, das ist richtig. Aber wenn wir ehrlich sind, wir müssen zugestehen, der große Durchbruch ist uns bis heute nicht gelungen. Das Thema der externen Dimension der Asyl- und Migrationspolitik ist in den letzten Monaten in den Mittelpunkt gerückt. Dafür ein Dank an die EU-Kommission und an die deutsche und portugiesische Ratspräsidentschaft. Und es ist auch wichtig, dass die Parlamente der Trio-Ratspräsidentschaft dieses Thema heute auf die Tagesordnung gesetzt haben. Aber machen wir uns nichts vor, die externe Dimension stellt nur einen Aspekt eines funktionierenden gemeinsamen europäischen Asylsystems dar. Sie steht im unmittelbaren Zusammenwirken mit der internen Dimension. An dieser Stelle betone ich deshalb ausdrücklich, dass Maßnahmen der externen Dimension ihre Wirksamkeit erst dann entfalten können, wenn wir eine kohärente und konsistente interne Asylpolitik in der Europäischen Union haben und auch tatsächlich in der Praxis umsetzen. Rund 2/3 der Menschen, die in der Europäischen Union aktuell einen Antrag auf Asyl oder Schutz stellen, haben im Ergebnis keinen Anspruch. Man kann es den einzelnen Menschen nicht vorwerfen, das würden wir in der entsprechenden Situation sicherlich auch entsprechend versuchen, in voller Kenntnis, dass sie kein Bleiberecht haben werden, hier einen Antrag zu stellen. Wenn diese Menschen wüssten, dass sie keine Chance auf einen dauerhaften Aufenthalt in der Europäischen Union haben, würden sie überwiegend nicht auf den und teilweise ja auch sehr gefährlichen und kostspieligen Weg nach Europa sich in Bewegung setzen. Unsere aktuelle Asylpraxis setzt hier aber kein klares Zeichen. Auch bei denjenigen, die keinen Schutzanspruch haben, besteht nämlich die hohe Wahrscheinlichkeit, dass sie dauerhaft in der Europäischen Union bleiben können. Unser aktuelles Asylsystem und die gelebte Asylpraxis stellen deshalb einen hohen Pull-Effekt dar und sind damit selbst von einer großen externen Wirkung. Was wir wirklich brauchen, sind eine vollständige und zügige Registrierung und Erfassung der Antragsteller, flächendeckende beschleunigte Erstprüfungen, ob ein Schutzanspruch offensichtlich ausscheidet, und zügige Durchführung der Asylverfahren. Wenn ein Schutzanspruch ausscheidet, muss dies auch eine zeitnahe Durchführung entweder der freiwilligen Rückkehr oder der Rückführungen zur Folge haben. Tatsächliche Anwendung der Verfahrens- und Unterbringungsstandards, wie sie in unseren Rechtsvorschriften ja längst vorgesehen sind, um die Sekundärmigration deutlich einzudämmen. Die vorliegenden Legislativpakete zum GEAS sind hier ein guter Ansatz. Wir wissen, dass die Verhandlungen über längere Zeit zum Stillstand kamen. Nach Vorlage des Pakts für Migration und Asyl durch die Kommission und prominenter Aufnahme durch die deutsche Ratspräsidentschaft ist wieder Bewegung in das Thema gekommen. Bislang sieht es aber nicht danach aus, dass wir in Kürze zum Abschluss und zu einem Durchbruch in allen Bereichen kommen werden. Aktuell bestehen einige Länder auf der Paketlösung, das heißt, dass die Legislativpakete nur insgesamt abgeschlossen werden sollen. Dadurch ist zurzeit auch die Einrichtung einer EU-Asylagentur, die dringend notwendig wäre, nicht möglich. Der Innenminister hat ja darauf hingewiesen, die fünf entscheidenden Länder haben aber jetzt signalisiert, dass sie damit einverstanden sind, wenn andere Punkte in anderen Legislativpaketen rausgenommen werden. Also hier eine Sunset Clause eingerichtet wird, dass die restlichen Regelungen erst dann gelten, wenn das Restpaket verabschiedet wird. Warum denn dieser Widerstand einiger Länder, der ja auch an anderen Stellen erkennbar ist? Meines Erachtens steckt dahinter die Befürchtung der betroffenen Länder an der EU-Außengrenze, dass sie ähnlich wie bei dem alten Dublin-System durch eine Umsetzung über das Asyl- und Migrationsmanagement und der Verordnung zum Asylverfahren übermäßig belastet werden. Bundestagspräsident Wolfgang Schäuble hat in seinem Grußwort ja auch darauf hingewiesen, dass wir die besonders betroffenen Länder im Bereich der EU-Außengrenze nicht im Stich lassen dürfen. Und vor allem müssen die betroffenen Mitgliedstaaten erkennen und auch wirklich den Eindruck haben, dass wir das ernst nehmen und durch unser Asylsystem die Überforderung einzelner Mitgliedstaaten ausgeschlossen ist. Das bedeutet, Solidarität und Verantwortung fängt nicht erst bei größeren Migrationsbewegungen an und fängt nicht erst an, wenn es um die Umverteilung von Flüchtlingen innerhalb der Europäischen Union geht. Wir müssen vielmehr hinkommen zu einer echten und gerechten Lastenteilung von Anfang an. Wenn dies sichergestellt wird, sehe ich keinen Grund, dass die Anrainerstaaten sich einer Lösung versperren. Dann kann der gordische Knoten in den Verhandlungen gelöst werden. Und erst wenn es uns gelingt, ein tatsächlich funktionierendes, gemeinsames Asylsystem im Inneren zu installieren und umzusetzen, können kluge Maßnahmen im Bereich der externen Dimension ihre volle Wirkung entfalten. Und hier ist der Ansatz, Migrationspartnerschaften zu Drittländern, also zu Herkunftsländern und Transitländern aufzubauen bzw. auszubauen, es bestehen ja einige, außerordentlich zu begrüßen. Hier wird die Zusammenarbeit aber nur dann funktionieren können, wenn sich die Drittländer nicht nur als Erfüllungsgehilfe einer EU-Migrationspolitik verstehen und sehen, sondern wenn sie als echte Partner in Erscheinung treten und von uns auch entsprechend wertgeschätzt werden. Die Ausrichtung der Außen- und Innenminister vom 15. März 2021 ist deshalb zu begrüßen. Vereinbarungen sollten bereichsübergreifend sein und verschiedene Themen miteinander verknüpfen. Also nicht nur die Rückführung und Rückübernahme, sondern insbesondere auch Möglichkeiten der Reintegration, des Handels, der wirtschaftlichen Zusammenarbeit, der Forschung, der Bildung und so weiter. Dass zunächst ein Pilotprojekt durchgeführt werden soll und Partnerschaften mit einigen Ländern angestrebt werden, ist in Ordnung. Aber, meine Damen und Herren, die Zahlen steigen wieder. Der Migrationsdruck nimmt zu und wir wissen nicht, ob besondere Umstände wie etwa 2015 eine neue Massenwanderung in Bewegung setzen wird. Deshalb sollten wir auch hier möglichst keine Zeit verschenken. Das eingeleitete Verfahren nach Artikel 25a Visa-Kodex ist zu begrüßen. Nach einem Bericht der EU-Kommission kooperieren ein Drittel der Länder schlecht bis gar nicht. Das Problem besteht seit Jahren. Noch in diesem Sommer muss der Umsetzungsbeschluss erfolgen und müssen Sanktionen auf den Weg gebracht werden. Die Europäische Union darf hier kein zahnloser Tiger sein. Länder, die eklatant gegen ihre Verpflichtungen verstoßen und nicht bereit sind, eigene Staatsbürger zurückzunehmen oder zeitnah zurückzunehmen, müssen die möglichen Sanktionen auch spüren. Meine Damen und Herren, vollenden wir das gemeinsame europäische Asylsystem möglichst zügig und bringen dort womöglich eine viel engere und partnerschaftliche Zusammenarbeit mit Drittstaaten, also Herkunftsländern und Transitländern, auf den Weg. Meine Überzeugung ist, dass die funktionierende Asylpolitik ein Lackmustest für die Europäische Union ist. Gelingt es uns nicht, Migration nach den Vorstellungen der Europäischen Union und der Mitgliedstaaten zu ordnen, zu steuern und zu begrenzen, könnte dies erhebliche Nachteile für die Akzeptanz unserer Politik mit sich bringen und politische Nahrung für die Rechtspopulisten sein. Dies gilt es zu vermeiden. Vielen Dank.
Thank you very much, dear colleague. And now I give the floor to Mr. Alberto Capani from the organization Operazione Colomba. You have the floor for 5 minutes, please.
Ringrazio il Parlamento europeo e la presidenza portoghese, il presidente del Parlamento Sassoli di questa possibilità. Parlo a nome di Operazione Colomba, che è un corpo civile di pace della comunità Giovanni XXIII che vive in aree di conflitto, in particolare dal 2013 nei campi profughi del nord del Libano. E nei campi profughi significa proprio che viviamo come volontari nelle tende, cercando di farsi solidali e vicini alla situazione dei rifugiati scappati dalla Siria, come dicono loro, sono parole loro, perché non volevano né combattere, quindi né prendere parte alla guerra né essere uccisi, che è una condizione direi abbastanza condivisibile. E vivendo con queste persone si sono aperte alcune possibilità di cui abbiamo parlato con il Presidente del Parlamento Europeo Sassoli e che riportiamo anche a voi perché riteniamo che possano essere studiate e approfondite dall'Unione Europea di cui siamo parte ovviamente. E queste possibilità sono due principalmente. La prima è che dal 2016 siamo stati i primi insieme ad altre, alla Comunità di Sant'Egidio, alla Federazione delle Chiese Valdesi, a aprire dei corridoi umanitari che portassero dal Libano in Italia, Francia e Belgio e anche Andorra 3.000 e più persone, evitando a loro sia la morte per povertà in Libano, sia la morte per tortura e altri tipi di pericoli in Siria, sia il viaggio in mare con i conseguenti rischi. Quindi questi corridoi umanitari gestiti da privati e con la concessione di visti da parte del governo italiano, del governo francese, belga, hanno rappresentato un esperimento che funziona. L'integrazione funziona addirittura meglio dei resettlement gestiti dalle Nazioni Unite con ben altri mezzi. E la seconda diciamo, proposta che nasce dalla vita nei campi profughi è questa: un gruppo di profughi siriani scappati in particolare dalle zone confinanti con il nord del Libano ha scritto una proposta di pace che prevede la creazione di aree sicure di ritorno in Siria. Noi sappiamo, e lo sa bene anche l'Unione Europea, che l'ha dichiarato più volte pubblicamente, che la Siria non è un paese sicuro in questo momento, perché le condizioni che hanno causato la guerra, che hanno causato più di 500.000 di morti e più di 10 milioni di profughi, di cui 6 milioni fuori dal paese, sono ancora, come dire, al potere. E quindi le persone con cui viviamo, che vivono nei campi profughi poverissimi del nord del Libano, preferiscono morire di fame che tornare in Siria, perché sanno che saranno, nel caso ritornino, gli uomini saranno costretti a combattere o verranno incarcerati, e i carceri siriani significano morte per lo più. E ecco, queste persone del nord del Libano hanno scritto una proposta di pace che chiede la creazione di aree sicure di ritorno. Noi abbiamo studiato questa possibilità, in particolare con esempi che sono stati attuati nel nord della Colombia, che è una zona di guerra in cui viviamo da 10 anni praticamente. Alcune comunità di pace hanno creato delle zone sicure e delle zone disarmate in cui non hanno dato nessun tipo di appoggio né a nessuna delle fazioni in lotta. Che cosa chiediamo al Parlamento europeo? Chiediamo di studiare uno spazio di studio e di ascolto in cui una proposta di questo tipo venga ascoltata e venga proprio esaminata, perché l'Unione Europea non ha solo bisogno di immigrazione, come è stato detto dal Ministro degli Affari Interni del Portogallo, Eduardo Cabrita, e anche la stessa Unione Europea è nata dal desiderio di rendere impossibile un'altra guerra, e credo naturalmente sia la casa per proposte di questo tipo. Noi a chi possiamo proporre qualcosa del genere? Alla Russia? Agli Stati Uniti? E all'Iran, all'Arabia Saudita, posso continuare con l'elenco. Io credo che proprio l'Unione Europea sia il posto, come l'Unione Europea è nata proprio per questo desiderio di libertà e di democrazia, e dopo l'avventura terribile della Seconda Guerra Mondiale dei totalitarismi, sia il posto in cui una proposta di questo tipo può essere ascoltata e può essere approfondita, studiata e resa possibile. Cioè, non solo l'Unione Europea ha bisogno di immigrazione, ma è anche la casa in cui degli immigrati possono, delle persone che sono costrette a scappare, possono fare una proposta di questo tipo. Quindi vi ringraziamo dell'ascolto e affidiamo a voi questa possibilità, dando disponibilità ovviamente per contattare sia questi siriani sia chi di noi ha lavorato in questo senso. Dopo che già il Parlamento tedesco, il Parlamento italiano, il governo francese hanno ascoltato con estremo interesse una proposta di questo tipo. Vi ringrazio.
Thank you very much, Mr. Capani. Now let's start the exchange of views with members of national parliaments and members of the European Parliament. I will give the floor to alternating members of the national parliaments and the European Parliament. And allow me to remind all members that the speaking time is strictly limited to 1 minute and a half for each of your interventions. The first speaker is AMEP Maria Arena, Chair of the Subcommittee on Human Rights. You have the floor for 1 minute and a half. Please, you have the floor.
Merci beaucoup. Je vais parler en français. Une minute et demie pour parler de la question des droits de l'homme et de la migration, c'est pas beaucoup. Je reprendrai les termes qui ont été dits par le précédent intervenant, qui dit que si l'Europe a besoin de migration, l'Europe est aussi une terre de droits de l'homme qui fait la promotion des droits de l'homme à l'intérieur, et c'est inscrit dans les traités, mais qui a l'obligation de promouvoir les droits de l'homme à l'extérieur, et c'est aussi inscrit dans les traités. Et donc, quand nous traitons de la migration et de la condition des migrants qui aujourd'hui sont dans des parcours migratoires depuis la Syrie, depuis la Libye, depuis l'Afrique subsaharienne, eh bien, nous avons un engagement, c'est un engagement de les protéger dans leur parcours migratoire. Et cela n'est pas de la bienveillance européenne, cela est inscrit dans les traités, mais aussi dans les conventions internationales que les pays membres de l'Union européenne et que l'Union européenne a elle-même signé, et je prends par exemple la Convention de Genève, qui impose à l'Union européenne et à ses États membres de prendre en considération les besoins de protection des personnes qui sont à la porte de l'Europe. Et aujourd'hui, malheureusement, que ce soit dans le cadre du pacte migratoire ou dans la politique de migration européenne, eh bien cela, c'est-à-dire le respect des droits de l'homme, n'est pas garanti. Et il n'est pas garanti non plus quand nous signons des accords avec des partenaires tels que la Turquie, tels que d'autres pays, la Libye. Dans ce cas-là, ces pays ne respectent pas les droits de l'homme de facto et nous signons avec des pays qui ne respectent pas les droits de l'homme et donc nous sommes en effraction, en infraction par rapport à notre législation. Merci.
Merci beaucoup. And now I give the floor to Carmelo Mifsud Bonici, member of the Parliament of Malta, for 1 minute and a half. You have the floor. Mr. Carmelo Mifsud Bonici is not with us, so Mr. Andrius Mazuronis from the Lithuanian Seimas.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dear colleagues, it's been a pleasure to listen for all of the previous speakers, especially those who were representing European institutions, and in particular Mr. Margaritis Šinas, who described very informatively and very openly the migration policies and how European Commission sees how they should be applied in practice. But actually, almost all of the previous speakers were speaking about migration coming only from North Africa. But I have to say that today European Union is facing one new challenge coming from the East, and we're talking about Belarus and increasing figures of migration coming from Belarus, not as a result of natural migration processes, but as a result of response to the European Union's political actions. And therefore, I have to call that type of migration basically a state-initiated migration or a state-supported migration. And I have to say that up to this year's July, we have seen increased numbers in migration by 30 times compared to the same time period in 2020. And it's not a natural migration. It's a migration supported by Belarusian authorities as a response to the European Union's actions against it. That's why I think that such kind of migration and the response to that kind of activity should be very well reflected as well in such upcoming documents when we talk about like migration pact, which was very broadly described. But I think that that kind of challenges using migration as a tool should be also reflected in that kind of strategic future documents of the European Union. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker is Carlo Ressler from the European Parliament. You have the floor.
Esteemed speakers, honorable colleagues, everything that we heard today on this conference proves once again that migration has been and will continue to be one of the most complex and the most defining European challenges. The EU has a chance to be the leading global power in showcasing the right path for managing migration flows by showing solidarity to those in need of international protection, by being effective with return policies with those who do not fulfill the criteria for asylum, and also being completely firm with smugglers and human traffickers who prey on those who are vulnerable. In all these aspects, we need cooperation with third countries. We cannot look at this only within the European Union, as this is not just a European problem, but a regional problem and even global one. cooperation with third countries, being countries of origin or transit countries, is one of the crucial elements of the comprehensive package. And in that sense, my question for the panelists is concerning transit countries on the Balkan route. Where do you see the need for further involvement from the EU, but and also the agencies in those transit countries, who are at the same time also candidate or potential candidate countries for the accession to the EU?
Thank you very much. Next speaker is Manos Konsolas from Hellenic Parliament. You have the floor. Mr. Konsolas, can you hear me? Yes, you have the floor. Please, Mr. Konsolas.
Yes, I'm here.
Ah, okay.
Okay, thank you. Κυρία Πρόεδρε, κύριε Υπουργέ, κυρίες και κύριοι συνάδελφοι, το μεταναστευτικό δεν αποτελεί πρόβλημα των χωρών του Νότου, αποτελεί ευρωπαϊκό πρόβλημα. Και με μεγάλη ικανοποίηση άκουσα τον Υπουργό να το διαπιστώνει και να το διατυπώνει. Γι' αυτό και απαιτεί κοινό ευρωπαϊκό σύστημα ασύλου και αυτή είναι η πρώτη διαπίστωση. Όσοι προτάσουν την αντιμετώπιση του προβλήματος των δευτερογενών μεταναστευτικών ροών, θα πρέπει να συνειδητοποιήσουν ότι αυτό που προηγείται είναι η αντιμετώπιση του προβλήματος των πρωτογενών μεταναστευτικών ροών. Και αυτό κάνουμε εμείς εδώ στην Ελλάδα. Στις αρχές του Μαρτίου του 20 είχαμε μια προκάλυπτη εργαλειοποίηση του μεταναστευτικού και αναφέρομαι στην απόπειρα εισβολής των παράτυπων μεταναστών σε ευρωπαϊκό έδαφος στα ελληνοτουρκικά σύνορα. Απόπειρα που βοηθήθηκε και από το τουρκικό κράτος. Η Ελλάδα τότε στηρίχθηκε και από τις ευρωπαϊκές δυνάμεις για να αποτρέψει αυτό το ενδεχόμενο. Συνεχώς όμως, επειδή εκπροσωπώ μια χώρα που το μεγαλύτερο βάρος το έχει πάρει στις πλάτες της, η Ελλάδα δεν κάνει εκπτώσεις στις κοινές ευρωπαϊκές αξίες και στον ανθρωπισμό. Είναι χιλιάδες οι διασώσεις και έχει συνδράμει σε χιλιάδες διασώσεις στα σύνορα από υπηκόους τρίτων χωρών. Προτάσω την ανάγκη διαμόρφωση ενός κοινού ευρωπαϊκού συστήματος ασύλου, την επανατοποθέτηση και επαναδιαπραγμάτευση μιας νέας συμφωνίας Ευρωπαϊκής Ένωσης Τουρκίας σε νέες βάσεις και θα πρέπει να, αυτή η συμφωνία να αποτελεί και μια συμφωνία πρότυπο για τρίτες χώρες. Θα πρέπει να αποτελεί πιλότο και για οποιαδήποτε άλλη χώρα να δίνει το δικαίωμα υποβολής αιτήματος στο άσυλο στο τουρκικό έδαφος και θα πρέπει να συνδέεται και η συμφωνία με την ενεργοποίηση της Frontex. Επίσης, τελειώνοντας, να επιβάλλει και να γίνεται αποδεκτή η επιστροφή όσων απορρίπτονται οι αιτήσεις σε τρίτες χώρες. Θα πρέπει λοιπόν να διαπιστώσουμε ότι το νέο αυτό πλαίσιο συμφωνίας και κυρίως η τήρησή του θα αποτελούν προαπαιτούμενο για τις πολιτικές στήριξης και οικονομικής συνεργασίας που θα εκπονεί η Ευρωπαϊκή Ένωση στις τρεις χώρες. Με αυτόν τον τρόπο δυναμώνει η γεωπολιτική θέση και το αποτύπωμα της Ευρωπαϊκής Ένωσης στην περιοχή. Σας ευχαριστώ πολύ, κύριε Πρόεδρε.
Thank you very much. Next speaker is Nick Prevol from Slovenian Parliament.
Najlepša hvala, spoštovani gostje. Strinjam se, Evropska unija vsekakor potrebuje priseljevanje, delovno silo in strokovnjake na različnih področjih. A vendar mora migracija potekati na zakonit način, na naš način, evropski. Ustvarjanje hitrih in pa zakonitih poti je vsaj upam v strateškem interesu celotne Evropske unije, tudi iz vidika naše skupne prihodnosti. In prva pot do tega je zagotovo pakt o azilu in migracijah. Jaz menim, da moramo to sprejeti čim prej in tiste ključne stvari tudi v paketu. Slovenija podpira ta celovit in pa uravnotežen pristop k migracijah, ki pa mora temeljiti na vzajemnih partnerstvih. Vsaka država sama zase namreč ni zmožna rešiti teh izzivov skupaj s sodelovanjem in pa seveda s sodelovanjem z državami izvora, pa lahko te zadeve do določene mere vsekakor uredimo. In hud problem poleg nezakonitih migracij so seveda zlorabe, ki se ob tem dogajajo. Številna tihotapljenja, preprodaja, organiziran kriminal. In Ljudem, ki pomoč potrebujemo, moramo pomagati in pa kriminalcem stopiti na prste. In pri tem imajo veliko vlogo tudi nacionalni parlamenti, ne nazadnje ustvarjamo zakonodajo in naš pogled in pa naše mnenje je pomembno. In jaz menim, da ga Evropa mora znati slišati, predvsem pa mora Evropa kot enota najti ta konsens med različnimi pogledi na reševanje težav z migracijami. Pritisk namreč na države, ki pa smo ob teh migracijskih poteh, bo vedno večji in jaz si res želim hitrih in učinkovitih postopkov, ki bodo rezultat skupnega dela in pa temeljnih vrednot celotne Evropske unije. Hvala lepa.
Thank you very much. Next speaker is Dietmar Koster from European Parliament.
Thank you for giving me the floor, dear colleagues. The universality and the indivisibility of human rights are the core of the EU. The right to life, the right to integrity, and the prohibition of ill treatment, the right to asylum, and the right to flee are some of the main rights that the Charter of Fundamental Rights recognizes as being applicable individual to all human beings. Nevertheless, these rights are constantly being broken both at the EU's external borders and its neighboring countries. The EU contributes to this through its own agency. We have seen video material that shows how Frontex is actively involved in pushbacks. Furthermore, Libya is one example of how the EU is throwing its own values and EU law overboard to build a fortress and to keep numbers of arrivals low. The EU allows the so-called Libyan Coast Guard, which consists mainly of militiamen, to intercept rescued people and bring them back to Libya illegally into detention centers, where they are blackmailed, abused and tortured. Libya cannot be considered as a safe place to disembark people. This kind of the EU's cooperation with third countries is unethical and against fundamental rights. In general, the EU's cooperation with third countries to prevent arrivals in Europe without clear human rights-based requirements in any kind of agreements is highly problematic. Human rights are so important for the European Union, or the EU will lose its credibility to stand for human rights. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next speaker is Danuta Jalowska from the Polish Senate. She's not with us. No, so I give the floor to Piero Fassino from the Italian Chamber of Deputies. Mr. Fassino, you have the floor.
Concordo pienamente con. Pronto. Grazie, io concordo pienamente con le relazioni che ho ascoltato, soprattutto con la sottolineatura che ha fatto l'onorevole Cabrita del fatto che le migrazioni non sono una minaccia, perché la storia dell'umanità è storia di migrazioni, e soprattutto che l'Europa ha bisogno di un contributo demografico aggiuntivo rispetto a quello dato dai suoi tassi di natalità. Forse vale la pena di ricordare che con gli attuali tassi di natalità il continente europeo alla fine di questo secolo avrà 70 milioni di abitanti in meno. Il che vuol dire che abbiamo bisogno di un contributo demografico aggiuntivo, e questo non può che venire dalle migrazioni. Questo vuol dire che noi non possiamo dire, come nel passato è stato detto troppe volte, accettiamo i profughi ma non i migranti economici, perché a parte la difficoltà qualche volta di distinguere chi è un profugo, chi è un migrante economico, le due cose magari si sovrappongono, dei migranti economici abbiamo bisogno. E quindi il tema è come si ha una politica, una strategia europea di migrazioni legali. Non possiamo semplicemente discutere di come rendere più sicure le nostre frontiere, di come respingere i clandestini, che è tutto giusto, ma la principale efficacia di una lotta alla clandestinità, al mercato nero delle braccia, ai trafficanti, è di avere corridoi di migrazione legale, concordati tra i paesi di destinazione e i paesi di origine e i paesi di transito, con una strategia europea che sia capace di gestire questo fenomeno che, ripeto, ha un carattere strutturale e di cui l'Europa ha bisogno. Questo significa condivisione. Le proposte, il regolamento di Dublino non è più sufficiente, va superato. Le proposte avanzate dalla Presidente della Commissione europea von der Leyen sono un primo passo, secondo me ancora timido, però sono un primo passo. Resta il fatto però che anche quelle proposte così timide non sono state accettate da alcuni paesi europei. Allora, io penso che bisogna fare ogni sforzo perché questi paesi accettino le proposte che sono venute avanti, ma se non avviene, io credo che bisogna lavorare a una coalition of willing tra i paesi che sono disposti ad avere una strategia condivisa sui temi migratori, lungo le proposte che ha fatto anche il collega Seif del Bundestag. Infine c'è un'ultima questione. Tutto questo è un aspetto del problema, e cioè come noi gestiamo i flussi migratori verso l'Europa. Poi c'è un altro grande tema che non possiamo non vedere, ed è l'Africa, nella quale oggi abita 1.300.000.000 di persone, che alla fine del secolo saranno 4 miliardi. Allora nessuna persona di buon senso può pensare che il futuro di 4 miliardi di persone viene risolto con l'emigrazione, e quindi un grande tema che l'Europa ha di fronte è di avere una strategia per l'Africa. Borrell ha ricordato qualche giorno fa che se si fa la somma degli investimenti dei paesi europei in Africa, sono molto di più di quello che spende la Cina in Africa. Ma senza una strategia europea di sistema, quei tanti investimenti di ogni singolo paese non hanno l'efficacia che ha una strategia sistemica da parte dell'Europa, in grado di contenere e di non lasciare lo sviluppo dell'Africa soltanto alla Cina. Grazie.
Thank you very much. Next speaker is Sylvie Guillaume from the European Parliament.
Oui, bonjour à vous tous et bonjour Edith. J'en profite pour un petit message personnel. Dans cette deuxième partie de la conférence, tout le monde peut comprendre le souhait de l'Union européenne de bâtir des partenariats mutuellement bénéfiques et façonnés pour satisfaire toutes les parties en présence, les pays de destination, les pays de transit ou bien les pays d'origine. Mais cette politique extérieure en matière de migration n'acte-t-elle pas d'une certaine manière une externalisation de la politique migratoire ? Qui plus est, au travers d'accords peu transparents, c'est le moins qu'on puisse dire, et dont on peut imaginer en outre qu'ils peuvent créer une forme de dépendance à l'égard des pays tiers où les droits de l'homme sont un peu sujets à caution et où la situation des migrants est un levier politique. Par exemple, voyons la Turquie qui, au bout de 5 ans d'accords renouvelés, le président turc continue d'exercer des pressions politiques sur l'Union, ou bien le Maroc avec les récents événements de Ceuta et l'utilisation des mineurs non accompagnés pour faire pression sur la frontière. Alors, comment pensez-vous que cette utilisation des accords puisse être évitée ? Et ensuite, le pacte asile-migration proposé par la Commission. Celui-ci s'inscrit dans la même logique et propose de lier la politique de retour à celle des visas destinés aux pays tiers, en adoptant des mesures plus favorables ou plus, au contraire, des restrictions en fonction de leur degré de coopération. Indépendamment de l'appréciation générale qu'on peut avoir sur le pacte asile-migration, pensez-vous que cet objectif soit réalisable et surtout soit plus efficace qu'une politique de migration légale, contrôlée et sûre ? Merci à vous tous.
Merci beaucoup, chère Sylvie. Je suis contente de te revoir. Et next speaker is Lars Castellucci from German Bundestag. Could you please activate your camera and microphone? Mr. Castellucci, can you hear me? No? Could you please activate your camera and microphone? Okay, let's continue. The next speaker is Isabel Oneto from the Portuguese Parliament. You have the floor.
Muito obrigada, Sra. Presidente. Queria referir que, da parte do Parlamento Português, o Sr. Ministro Português da Administração Interna já explicou as prioridades da presidência portuguesa em matéria de migração e asilo. Ela reflete aquilo que é também a nossa política interna em matéria de migração e asilo e que é fundada nos valores da solidariedade e da defesa dos direitos humanos, valores fundamentais da nossa Constituição e também da União Europeia. Parece que a Europa, relativamente à dimensão interna desta problemática, nomeadamente relativamente ao novo Pacto para a Migração e Asilo, tem mais dificuldade em resolver uma crise que se arrasta desde 2015, na crise migratória desse ano. Está há 6 anos para resolver esta questão e conseguiu, no entanto, em relação à pandemia Covid-19, unir esforços para a ultrapassar. Isto denota o quanto é difícil este dossiê no seio dos Estados-membros da União Europeia. Queria referir que, na sequência daquilo que tem sido a prioridade da presidência do Conselho da União Europeia, a dimensão parlamentar da presidência portuguesa vai realizar na próxima semana a conferência sobre o papel dos parlamentos no aprofundamento da relação União Europeia-África e debater temas como a cooperação União-ACP e o papel dos parlamentos e a cooperação União, a nova estratégia da União Europeia. Queria aqui destacar o eixo quinto desta estratégia abrangente, que precisamente prevê a gestão conjunta, uma gestão abrangente dos fluxos migratórios, da migração e da mobilidade entre a União Europeia e a África. É um assunto que, no âmbito também das parcerias, naturalmente, que devem ser feitas com os países, as parcerias que devem ser feitas com os países de origem e de trânsito, a questão desta gestão com a África é fundamental para que estas questões possam ser vistas de uma forma abrangente e, nessa medida, o Parlamento Português vai continuar a debater estes temas que são também importantes para a União Europeia. Muito obrigada.
Muito obrigada, Isabel. Querida colega, next speaker is Ana Maria Botella from the Spanish Congress. You have the floor. We can't hear you. Could you please activate your microphone?
Now? Microphone. Yes?
Yes, okay. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much. Buenas tardes a todos los colegas. Valoramos muy positivamente el trabajo y los avances de la presidencia portuguesa con la reunión del Consejo Jumbo de Ministros de Exteriores y de Interior de la Unión Europea el pasado mes de marzo y la conferencia ministerial sobre gestión de los flujos migratorios en Lisboa el pasado mes de mayo con ministros de Interior de Unión Europea, países africanos de origen y tránsito. Felicidades al ministro señor Cabrita. La experiencia acumulada de España como país de primera línea es que hay que priorizar y reforzar la dimensión exterior con una cooperación efectiva e integral con los países de origen y tránsito, con respeto y sin prepotencia. Hay que ir a las causas profundas de los flujos de la inmigración irregular. Hay que perseverar en una cooperación de interés mutuo entre la Unión Europea y los países africanos, y ello se ha de trasladar a las negociaciones del nuevo y futuro Pacto de Migración y Asilo. Es crucial para nosotros también que el nuevo instrumento de vecindad, desarrollo y cooperación internacional, que lamentablemente no estará operativo hasta mediados de 2022, reserve un porcentaje de su presupuesto para fines migratorios y que se contemplen proyectos de cooperación con países africanos en materias como el control fronterizo, la lucha contra el terrorismo yihadista, el crimen transnacional, la seguridad vial o la protección civil. La presidencia portuguesa también ha ido insistiendo y coincidimos plenamente. La dimensión exterior tiene que ser prioritaria en el nuevo Pacto de Migración y Asilo de la Unión Europea. Muchas gracias.
Muchas gracias. Next speaker is Cristian Bordai from the Romanian Senate.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues, the pandemic has unbalanced the incipient status quo gained in the attempt to attain a controllable and positive disruption of European society. To the economic crisis, which has almost globally worsened, has been added the health crisis, and the most exposed were also migrants. It is more than ever necessary to think in perspective and prophylactic. For the time being, migration is mainly of a socio-economic type, fueled by the political instability of emerging areas. But soon enough, migration will also become climatic. Preemptive diplomatic and economic intervention in areas generating migratory flow is crucial. It is infinitely easier to help migrants not to become migrants than to manage their uprooting. Multilateral and bilateral repositioning must remain continuous, sustained, and complementary in order to fully understand the needs of all parties involved. However, ladies and gentlemen, diversity remains the greatest advantage of a democratic society. If we cannot sometimes intervene politically and diplomatically to control the migration phenomenon, we must be prepared to integrate our fellow human beings in need. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. After the interventions of our parliamentarians who raised relevant questions, I will give the floor back to our speakers, Eduardo Cabrita and Detlef Seif, for their replies, each for 3 minutes. Minister Eduardo Cabrita, please, you have the floor for 3 minutes.
Thank you, dear Chair. E agora em português, se me permitem, eu queria agradecer as intervenções de todos os deputados de Parlamentos Nacionais e do Parlamento Europeu que usaram da palavra e que refletem quanto esta questão migratória é uma questão central da afirmação dos valores europeus e não é uma questão específica, como bem foi dito, deste ou daquele país. Não é uma questão da Grécia ou de Espanha, que costumamos ver como países da linha da frente. Pode ser uma questão da Lituânia, como foi levantado a semana passada pela ministra, pela minha colega Agnes Bilotaitė, ministra do Interior da Lituânia, com a atual situação de tensão em torno na relação com a Bielorrússia, ou pode ser uma questão de outros países que partilham fronteiras, têm fronteiras externas da União. Em segundo lugar, nós temos de ter simultaneamente uma resposta que dê lugar a uma grande firmeza no combate ao tráfico de seres humanos, no combate às redes que se aproveitam dos mais fracos, dos mais vulneráveis, e por isso temos de reforçar a nossa cooperação na defesa de fronteiras externas e, por outro lado, ter um caminho que promova a cooperação com os países vizinhos. Nós falamos de África pela sua dimensão e pela sua característica de continente jovem. Alguns deputados falaram da relação com os Balcãs Ocidentais. Os Balcãs Ocidentais estão aqui numa situação um pouco distinta, dado que deve reforçar-se a cooperação e a atuação nos Balcãs das agências europeias, designadamente da Frontex e o da EASO, mas são simultaneamente parceiros e países candidatos à adesão num horizonte de médio prazo. Aquilo que temos nesta área é de perceber que temos de ter uma dimensão global da forma de abordagem dos fluxos migratórios. A situação hoje é muito diferente de 2015, quer na dimensão do fenómeno, quer na forma como olhamos para ele. E por isso nós devemos, neste tempo, aproveitar para rapidamente aprofundar acordos. Os acordos sobre o EASO ou sobre o Blue Card são aqui sinais positivos. E temos de reforçar esta convergência política, percebendo que se podemos usar instrumentos como a concessão de vistos numa forma dinâmica de relação com a cooperação de países vizinhos na efetivação de retorno nacionais, temos também de reforçar a componente de cooperação para o desenvolvimento. E é muito importante que 10% dos fundos para apoio ao desenvolvimento estejam no próximo quadro 2021-27 atribuídos desde já àquilo que é a gestão de fluxos migratórios. Esta é uma questão em que é fundamental uma aproximação que fomos efetuando ao longo destes 6 meses naquilo que é talvez o tema mais divisivo da agenda europeia, mas uma aproximação em torno de uma questão que é não uma questão nacional, mas esta sim uma pura questão, típica questão comum europeia.
Many thanks, Minister. Muito obrigada, Sr. Ministro, querido amigo. And now I give the floor to Detlef Seif for replying to the questions for 3 minutes. You have the floor, please.
Danke, Frau Vorsitzende. Ich gehe zunächst mal ein auf den Vorschlag von Herrn Capanini, eine Sicherheitsschutzzone einzurichten im Bereich Syrien. Das ist eine gute Idee, die hatte auch bereits die deutsche Verteidigungsministerin Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer im Jahr 2019. Wir müssen natürlich über die genannten Länder hinaus auch die Türkei in die Überlegung einbinden und es ist völkerrechtlich, Syrien ist ein Staat, irgendwo muss sich Syrien auch wiederfinden, aber die Idee, der Ansatz ist gut und wir sollten als EU gemeinsam mit den Vereinten Nationen auch daran arbeiten, dass hier eine entsprechende Zone eingerichtet wird. Ich komme zu der Frage Balkan, welche Länder könnten denn beitreten? Naja, wir haben ganz klare rechtliche Vorgaben. Wir haben 4 Kandidaten, bei denen haben wir jetzt schon ein weit fortgeschrittenes Verfahren. Albanien, Montenegro, Nordmazedonien, Serbien. Wenn die Beitrittsvoraussetzungen erfüllt werden, ist kein Problem da. Dasselbe gilt auch für Bosnien und Herzegowina und Kosovo. Wenn Beitrittsverhandlungen begonnen werden, wenn nachher die Voraussetzungen erfüllt sind, dann ist natürlich nach unseren rechtlichen Vorschriften die Gelegenheit da und dann können die Länder beitreten. Belarus, das Argument und der Hinweis, dass zurzeit von der Regierung eine Migration in Gang gesetzt wird. Ich kann das nicht beurteilen, habe da jetzt keine Detailinformation drüber, aber Belarus ist ja zurzeit in einer schwierigen Lage. Und wenn jemand bei uns einen Antrag stellt und sagt, er ist politisch verfolgt, ist es ja zunächst nicht abwegig bei dem, was im Moment intern in Belarus los ist. Dann war von mehreren Teilnehmern der Hinweis darauf, die Europäische Union missachtet Menschenrechte im Grenzbereich oder jetzt beispielsweise in Libyen oder achtet nicht in der Türkei darauf, dass Menschenrechte eingehalten werden. Zunächst mal muss man sagen, natürlich haben wir als EU eine humanitäre Verpflichtung, auch an der Stelle, wo Hinweise sind, dagegen zu arbeiten. Aber es gibt ja keine rechtliche Verpflichtung. Wenn wir jetzt ein System auf den Weg brächten, wo man in der Türkei einen Asylantrag bei uns stellen könnte, wo man in einem anderen Land einen Asylantrag bei uns stellen könnte, ohne dass man das Gebiet der EU betritt, dann verlagert man ja die Problematik, man erzeugt neue hohe Pull-Effekte. Deshalb ist die Lösung, dass wir auch in diesem Sinne enge partnerschaftliche Zusammenarbeit mit anderen Ländern, Transitländern, Herkunftsländern anstreben. Und an der Stelle nur ein Hinweis, die Türkei wurde jetzt immer nur kritisch angemerkt. Da gibt es auch viel, was man kritisieren kann, das Verhalten im letzten Jahr, die innenpolitische Entwicklung. Aber erkennen wir an dieser Stelle auch einmal an, dass die Türkei Großartiges geleistet hat, was die Aufnahme und Unterbringung von Flüchtlingen angeht. Natürlich auch durch eine starke Unterstützung der Europäischen Union. Wir sollten das hier an der Stelle nicht kleinreden. EU-Türkei-Aktionsplan war sicherlich auch eine entscheidende und wichtige Maßnahme. Vielen Dank.
Thank you very much. To continue sharing the debate, I will now give the floor back to my colleague and co-chair, Juan Fernando López Aguilar. Juan Fernando, the floor is yours. Micro. Juan Fernando, please activate the microphone.
I can't hear you. Enable microphone.
Okay, we will try to be back to you, okay? But now let's move now to Hussein Altai from the Finnish Parliament, Finland. Hussein Altai.
Mr. Altai, you can press on the speak button.
Hussein Altai, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Hello, Madam Chairman, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much for this opportunity. Kiitos, että sain tulla. I will speak in English. It should be our common goal to strike a balance between responsibility and opportunity in the European migration policy. In Europe, we need talent and want to attract talent as we are an aging continent. It is in our benefit and the benefit of the third party nationals that migration is orderly. It is our responsibility to create a set of rules for people to be able to move to Europe, assist them in committing to European values of freedom and equal opportunity, so that for them to be able to contribute to the benefit of their new environment and find opportunity, comfort, and peace. Orderly migration sets the scene for stronger EU foreign policy implications. We are stronger when we are not easily pressured by external foreign powers on the brink of every crisis. Orderly foreign policy cuts the way of illegal immigration, human trafficking, and strengthens legal actors and bodies. Finland, which is a borderline A border state of the EU, perceives that responsible foreign development aid and working relations with neighbors and a coherent EU foreign policy are key to ensuring an effective role in migration policies. As there are always more people who want to come to Europe than we can handle, it is important for us to commit to effective foreign development aid. peace brokerage through mediation also. The goal is for people of developing nations is not to come to Europe as being forced because of the war and conflict, but rather it should be our goal, and EU should seek a united front in engaging in conflict resolution to alleviate the harsh situations of people that people face in their home countries. We should also pay attention in our selection processes to members of vulnerable countries like the Uyghurs and the Tamils of Sri Lanka. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Altai. Now we'll try to be back to Fabian Al-Salami, but please, dear colleagues, I remind you, we're now exceeding the time that we were originally allocated. So please try to make it in 1 minute and a half so that we can hear also from our guest speakers, Minister Cabrita and Detlef Saïd. So please, Al-Salami.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for giving me the floor. And just a friendly reminder, my name is Abir Al-Salami. Well, thank you all for your presentation. Having a strong and healthy relationship between EU and third countries is obviously a key to address and face future challenges when it comes to asylum. However, there is a perspective that is often forgotten, namely the legal labor migration. It plays an accessible role when it comes to external dimensions for the EU. Today, we have a patchwork of that makes the framework for the legal labor migration. But we need a new one to properly face and tackle demographic changes within the EU, as well as ensuring that our economies remain competitive on a global arena. This would create new legal pathways that would also reduce the pressure on the migratory tours, since we know that many of those who risk their lives on their way to the EU are in need of a job. As a rapporteur for legislative EFI, legal migration policy and the law, I'm well aware of this. There are two solutions that I'm going to incorporate in this file. One is that we have talent partnerships with third countries and the EU, and EU-wide talent pools. And these are both supported by the Commission. This would allow the EU to achieve so-called triple win solutions for all parties involved. In addition to this, I want to take a closer look at opening up for new complementary ways for legal labor migration, such as allowing for entrepreneurs, self-employed and startups to apply for a work permit within the EU. For each passing day, our patchwork of legislative framework make the EU less attractive for labor migrants of all skill levels. We need to create a new one while respecting national competences on the area if we want to enable our economies to fully recover and thrive also post-COVID. Thank you very much.
Okay, now we move to Pietro Lorefice del Senato Italiano. Onorevole Refce.
Grazie Presidente, illustri colleghi. Oggi abbiamo parlato ampiamente dei temi legati, diciamo, alla dimensione interna, ma anche alla dimensione esterna dei problemi delle politiche migratorie. Io cercherò di soffermarmi con così poco tempo alla parte legata alla dimensione esterna delle politiche migratorie, alla necessità, secondo l'avviso mio e dell'Italia, di affrontare i temi legati a quella che sono la gestione dei flussi nel medio-lungo periodo, perché da un canto siamo tenuti ad affrontare l'impatto legato anche alla stagionalità e, come Unione Europea, anche a quello dei flussi secondari interni all'Unione stessa, mentre altra cosa sono i tavoli negoziali da intraprendere in maniera veloce ed efficace con i paesi del Nord Africa in particolare, con la questione libica, ma anche con la Tunisia, dalle quali arrivano i maggiori flussi migratori nell'ultimo periodo che impattano in primo luogo sull'Italia, ma anche su Grecia e in parte sulla Spagna. Perciò i partenariati dell'Unione Europea nei confronti di questi stati africani, perciò non solo del Nord Africa, ma mi riferisco anche alla regione del Sahel, all'Africa subsahariana, con però avendo chiaro alcuni punti precisi, cioè il rispetto ai diritti fondamentali e dello Stato di diritto di tutti, la lotta al crimine organizzato, la previsione di adeguati strumenti per le riammissioni degli irregolari e la promozione di percorsi legali per consentire flussi controllati di migranti nel territorio europeo. Mi fermo, dato il poco tempo, ma avrei tanto altro da dire. Grazie.
Thank you. To try to stick to the timing, which is also a request for all the rest of the members of the speaking list. It'll go now to Cyrus Engerer, who won't have a trouble to connect because he's here in the room, member of the European Parliament. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair, thank you, co-presidents. The EU cannot look at migration in a vacuum. People arriving in Europe are coming from somewhere, and they are coming for a reason. Therefore, we must recognize that migration does not start when a person enters the European territory. This means that in legislating, we must ensure our policies are holistic and come full circle. We must address the root causes, deter human trafficking, ensure adequate reception should people ask for protection, and integration should asylum be granted. On the other hand, we need a European system of dignified returns for those that do not qualify for asylum in Europe, and I am glad that as a parliament in the LIBE committee, we are working to suggest a European-wide system that ensures a legal pathway for any talent and labour gaps our member states would be facing. Risking their lives on flimsy dinghies should not be the norm for human beings escaping persecution, nor for economic migrants seeking a better life. Colleagues, our weakest link is the inability to come together for common solutions to our common territory and our common frontiers. As we speak, 100 human beings are drifting on a dinghy in the Mediterranean Sea, somewhere between Libya, Lampedusa, and Malta. Those stopping collective efforts in Council do not want migrants in their member states and stop relocation. However, do they expect border member states to simply let people drown? We need common solutions for this common European problem. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. It'll be now Honorable Procaccini, Nicola, member of the Parliament Europeo. No, excuse me. It'll go first Davor Ivo Stier from the Croatian Parliament. I'm sorry, Nicola. Now we will be back to you. Davor Stier, Croatian Parliament. Davor? Croatia?
Mr. Stier, you can press on the speak button.
Okay. Gracias, señor presidente. Dear colleagues, strengthened partnership with the Western Balkan countries is, of course, of utmost importance for us in Croatia. Managing the Western Balkans migration route, which remains very active, is of our primary concern. Of course, that we should also focus on the wider neighborhood and the Middle East, Africa, but also countries as Afghanistan, Bangladesh, and Pakistan. And we will continue to encourage our partners to conclude readmission agreements, as well as agreements on border management cooperation with Frontex. In this particular case with, for example, Bosnia and Herzegovina, we are very much interested in assisting them in managing the border with Serbia at the Drina River, for example. Now, having said that, we are also determined to contribute to solving the root causes of migration. And to achieve that, we support the use of all the relevant tools, such as development cooperation in particular, visa policies encouraging legal migration, but also trade. So we believe that in this sense, the European Union has the tools. We need also the political will to use them. Thank you.
Now it will be Nicola Procaccini del Parlamento Europeo. Alla parola.
Grazie Presidente. Dicevo, a me fa piacere che finalmente si affronti il problema della frontiera esterna rispetto al fenomeno migratorio, perché fino ad oggi erano soltanto i movimenti politici di centrodestra ad affrontare questo aspetto, e mentre invece la restante parte del panorama politico era più concentrata sull'accoglienza degli immigrati legali. Questo secondo noi è stato un grave errore, e io spero che questo grave errore venga sanato ponendo appunto la giusta attenzione a ciò che avviene all'esterno dei confini europei. Questo significa stabilire a monte, stabilire nei paesi d'origine di transito chi ha diritto alla protezione internazionale e chi non ha diritto alla protezione internazionale. Soltanto ai primi deve essere a quel punto garantito un trasporto sicuro e legale in Europa, ai secondi non potrà essere garantito questo trasporto, ma almeno non si metterà la loro vita nelle mani di scafisti e criminali di ogni genere. Noi auspichiamo che quindi si fermino le partenze, che si possa finalmente governare il fenomeno migratorio. Governare il fenomeno migratorio significa garantire una qualità della vita migliore ai migranti, ma anche alle popolazioni che dovranno accogliere. Questa è la strada. Mi spiace constatare come invece ci sia ancora qualcuno che parla di sostituire gli europei in crisi di natalità con immigrati provenienti dall'Africa, perché questo secondo me non è la strada che vogliono gli europei, non è la strada migliore neanche per coloro che abitano in Africa, che vivono in Africa. Io ricordo che prima del diritto ad emigrare, come giustamente è stato notato da diversi pontefici, esiste il diritto a non emigrare, e quel diritto a non emigrare deve essere rispettato e garantito anche dall'Unione Europea. Grazie.
Grazie. Now it'll be Arminas Lydeka from the Lithuanian Seimas. Yes.
Merci, Mr. President. Chers colleagues, chers amis, now two sentences from Lithuania, Lithuania National Parliament. Migration surely remains a major challenge, especially from the frontline European Union member states. We fully acknowledge the importance of engagement with those third countries that are identified as a priority by the member states most severely affected by migratory pressure. We understand the situation, and whenever possible, we express our and provide support. However, I must highlight the need to keep focus on the Eastern European Union borders as well, as the situation in Belarus is alarming. The dictator of Belarus openly threatens to allow migrants and drugs to flood into the European Union. We already witness increased numbers of illegal migrants arriving through the border with Belarus, mainly from Iraq, Iran, Syria, and Turkey. Compared to the same period last year, as mentioned by my colleague Andrius Mazuronis, this year the numbers increased up in Lithuania up to 30 times. There is a reason to believe that officials in Belarus are fully aware of migrants smuggling across the Lithuanian border. However, this is deliberately not being stopped. We should therefore remain vigilant and be ready. This is an unpredictable regime, and we need to be prepared for anything. We seek political support from the European Union institutions and the member states. Our common goal is to ensure strong border protection and not to allow emerging of new migratory routes. Merci, Mr. President, chers colleagues.
Okay, thank you. Now it'll be Malin Björk from the European Parliament. 1 minute and a half, please.
Thank you, Chairman.
I think that indeed today we have heard different views and even different interpretation on what European values are. And from our side, from the left, I must say that if the European values are interpreted and materialized in the way that, for example, the Slovenian president representatives and also Vice President Skinas, I must sadly say, if that's the European values they envisage, then I am ashamed as a European. Because what they are actually forwarding is complicity and endorsement of brutality and malfunction and even illegality by EU and some member states. And I'm speaking about the pushback, I'm speaking about the border violence, I'm speaking about the systematic detention on the islands and other places in Europe. And I have heard that there have now been 49 suicide attempts by children in Lesbos. So have a think about that one. And we see persecution of NGOs that actually try to save lives, to make a difference out in search and rescue operations. So what do we need to do, of course? We need to focus on putting our own house in order, not about making dirty deals with external despots like Erdogan or militias in Libya. We have to make sure that we have a system for redistributing the responsibility for asylum seekers. So we speak about relocation. That is the key point here. We also speak about search and rescue operations in the Mediterranean. What is happening in the Mediterranean is not worthy. It can never be part of our values to let people drown and die on the way to Europe. And also, we need legal pathways. Others have been speaking about them. I work on the resettlement regulation. That needs to be adopted. We need humanitarian visas and we need legal labor migration. We are not there yet. I am so sad to hear about this, that the responsibility is to be outsourced to third countries. We need to act here now and we need European solutions that stand up for our human rights obligations. It is time.
Thank you. Now it will be Kostas Papadakis, European Parliament again. There you go. Kostas.
Hello. Thank you, Chair. When the EU talks about holistic, comprehensive management of the migration, it means the strategy of using migration as a tool for its geopolitical goals. On the grounds of imperialist interventions and plans for greater penetrations in third countries, either of origin or transit of immigrants, the EU seeks to benefit its own business groups to the detriment of their competitors from US, China and Russia. The EU and governments talk about the promotion of their humanitarian standards in third countries. What are they talking about? Moria's nightmare? Deportations with the assistance of Frontex? Or the savage repression in Ceuta? Or the deportations of Syrian refugees from Denmark back to the hell of their country? The claims that the Morias are over is not true. Only within the last month, we have had three deaths and one birth literally at the gate of the Vial Center in Chios, while more than 1,000 unaccompanied minors are registered as homeless. The so-called European Solidarity of Dublin Treaty and the Common Declaration of EU-Turkey went bankrupt and continues to entrap thousands in prison camps in Greece while residents continue to oppose their construction. Prison superstructures are multiplying because it is certain that fronts of war and refugee flows will increase again with the responsibility of the EU, its governments and their allies. Against this barbaric policy, the only response is the common struggle of migrant and refugee and the workers in each country, the strengthening of solidarity against capitalist exploitation and imperialist war, fighting xenophobia, isolating the racist crisis. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, now it'll go to Sergio Ramos, Spanish Senate. Senado Español, Sergio Ramos, por favor, conectado. Adelante.
Muchas gracias, señor presidente, estimadas señorías y colegas. No es fácil resumir lo que ocurre en España en tan poco tiempo, pero me veo obligado a denunciar ante este foro, donde hay muchísimos parlamentarios de los Estados miembros, que el Gobierno de España hace dejación de funciones en materia de inmigración en España y quiero poner el foco en mi tierra, las Islas Canarias, en Ceuta y en Melilla. Señorías, somos la frontera sur de Europa y hoy podría hacer una reivindicación ante todos ustedes para que Europa solucione este gran problema. Y es cierto que es un problema de todos, pero no podemos ir de víctimas sin que España cumpla con sus responsabilidades, porque España también es Europa. El gobierno de España ha hecho, como he dicho, una irresponsabilidad porque ha abandonado la política de seguridad, la política diplomática y la política humanitaria. La única política que se ha hecho ha sido abrir campamentos de manera compulsiva, donde se han vulnerado los derechos humanos en Canarias, donde se han visto personas tiradas en el suelo en condiciones absolutamente lamentables. O como en Melilla, que se han metido a más de 500 personas en una plaza de toros y a 1.000 menores en las calles. Y como ustedes ya saben, las imágenes en Ceuta han sido bochornosas y en tan solo unos días entraron en Ceuta 100.000 personas. Un claro déficit de política diplomática con el Reino de Marruecos. Me van a permitir, señorías, que para terminar sea necesario que la Unión Europea exija al Gobierno de España que cumpla con la ley de extranjería y los protocolos de la Unión Europea. Esto no se ha acabado y no se ha puesto solución. Por ejemplo, le diré que en Canarias en el año 2020 llegaron 23.000 personas a nuestras islas y en lo que va de año 2021 ya estamos en un 134% más. Y a esto hay que añadir que además el Gobierno de España ocultó el informe Frontex donde se alertaba de la llegada masiva de pateras a Canarias. Y yo les pregunto, señorías, para abrir el debate, ¿qué hay que hacer para que un Estado miembro como España no oculte un informe del Frontex de tal calibre? Queda patente, señorías, que en España no se están haciendo las cosas bien y exigimos a la Unión Europea que le exija a España que cumpla con las reglas de juego. Muchas gracias, señor presidente.
Running out of time, I only suggest to our both speakers, guest speakers, Minister Cabrita and Dieter Detlef Seif, please do it in 3 minutes, 4 minutes maximum, because we really are in a hurry and we would appreciate it if you can summarize your responses, your reactions as to the questions that have been raised by the members, which have been willing to animate this discussion. So please, Minister Cabrita, you go first, if you will, to conclude.
Muchas gracias, Juan Fernando. É difícil, de facto, em pouco tempo, responder àquilo que, pelas intervenções feitas, está demonstrado é um dos maiores testes e desafios para as instituições europeias, para os povos europeus. Mas eu julgo que, neste momento, estamos no tempo certo e no caminho certo. Estamos no tempo certo porque não estamos na situação crítica de 2015, de impreparação da Europa. E por isso temos de agir, e temos de agir antes que estejamos novamente perante uma situação de crise extrema. Em segundo lugar, porque neste momento temos um quadro de propostas relativamente às quais foi feito nestes 6 meses de presidência portuguesa um avanço muito significativo. De uma forma equilibrada, valorizando uma relação com os países vizinhos que vê as migrações como um fenómeno natural e não como uma tragédia. Em segundo lugar, olhando de forma global para este fenómeno, percebendo que este é um desafio de todos os Estados-membros. É um desafio que bate à porta de Espanha nas Canárias, mas pode estar amanhã na Polónia ou na Lituânia, nas suas fronteiras com a Bielorrússia ou a Ucrânia. E por isso temos de, simultaneamente, ter uma forma comum de gestão de fronteiras, através do papel de agências como a Frontex, ou de gestão de pedidos de asilo numa dimensão humanitária essencial para a afirmação dos valores europeus, reforçando o papel da EASO. E, por outro lado, temos de olhar para aquela que é a dimensão de promoção de formas de migração legal. É esse o desafio com que se confronta toda a Europa. E por isso, os sinais dados durante a presidência portuguesa e que tentaremos aprofundar nestas poucas semanas até ao final da presidência, devem ter continuidade no nosso trio com a presidência eslovena, devem ser reafirmados no Conselho Europeu dos próximos dias 24 e 25, em que o tema será objeto de debate, e teremos de, agora que o debate técnico está no essencial concluído, temos de aprofundar o debate político. É para isso que o Parlamento Europeu é essencial, tal como os Parlamentos Nacionais, na afirmação daquela que é a voz dos povos, defendendo os valores democráticos e humanistas que estão na base da União Europeia e olhando para os fenómenos migratórios como algo natural. Uma Europa que esteve durante séculos em todo o mundo e que hoje é destinatária de pessoas que buscam na Europa a liberdade ou a segurança ou buscam o contributo para as economias europeias. Esta gestão deve ser feita em parceria, deve ser feita globalmente e por isso é tão importante aprofundarmos o trabalho em torno da proposta sobre o Pacto de Asilo e Migração. Muchas gracias, Juan Fernando, e we are going ahead working together.
Muito obrigado, Ministro Cabrita. Und jetzt bekommen Sie Detlef Seif, der Deutsche Bundestag, für die Diskussion. Sie haben das Wort.
Vielen Dank, Herr Vorsitzender. Ich werde mich wunschgemäß auch kurz fassen. Ich werde auf ein Thema eingehen. Also wir müssen unterscheiden Asylpolitik und Migrationspolitik im sonstigen Bereich. Wenn wir das nicht tun, dann werden wir nie ein Asylpaket beschließen können, das die Zustimmung aller Mitgliedstaaten erhält. Das heißt nicht, dass legale Migration nicht ausgebaut werden könnte und sollte, aber das muss gut überlegt sein. Wir können nicht jedem im Niedriglohnbereich ein Versprechen machen, dass er in die Europäische Union arbeiten kommt und schon gar nicht denjenigen, die möglicherweise nur unsere Sozialkassen belasten. Hier dürfen wir die Augen nicht verschließen. Deutschland hat ein Fachkräftezuwanderungsgesetz auf den Weg gebracht und hat da ganz eindeutig einige Bedingungen definiert, dass man bestimmte Voraussetzungen erfüllen muss, eine Sprachkompetenz muss da sein. Das sollten wir sicherlich auf europäischer Ebene auch ausbauen, Blue Card-Richtlinie erweitern. Aber was doch viel wichtiger ist, ist eine tatsächlich enge wirtschaftliche Zusammenarbeit mit den Herkunftsländern, mit den Transitländern, was es bisher in dieser Form nicht gibt. Da ist natürlich die Voraussetzung, dass unternehmerische Tätigkeit und unternehmerisches Klima in diesen betroffenen Regionen auch eine Situation vorfindet, dass man als Unternehmer sich dort auch niederlassen möchte. Also ich rede von Demokratie, Rechtsstaatlichkeit, Korruption, da haben wir nicht drüber gesprochen heute, aber das sind Dinge, die schrecken Unternehmer ab. Und hier müssen wir mit den gutwilligen Ländern einen Pakt schließen. Hier müssen wir mehr hingucken und hier sollte man Partnerschaften auf den Weg bringen, die auch zu einem echten Austausch von Arbeitnehmern führt. Ich kann mir vorstellen, dass wir Ausbildungspartnerschaften machen, Wirtschaftscluster in den betroffenen Regionen, sodass hier ein reger Austausch in Bewegung gesetzt wird. Nur noch ein Hinweis. Durch das Öffnen von legalen Migrationswegen im Arbeitsbereich werden wir nicht erreichen, dass der hohe Migrationsdruck zurückgeht. Das ist aus meiner Sicht ein Märchen, wenn man sieht, wie stark der Druck ist, wie viele Menschen zu uns kommen wollen. Wir müssen Pull-Effekte zurückführen und dürfen nicht noch zusätzliche Pull-Effekte schaffen. Vielen Dank.
Danke vielmals, Herr Seif. Das war fast alle. I understand that our dear Edita Estrella is not willing to add any concluding remark for the sake of timing, so will I, only to mention that surely this debate has been a fruitful exchange of views between members of European Parliament and national parliaments alike, what we call an interparliamentary exercise of cooperation, a role to be played both in legislative and policy making, to exert political leadership in Europe, which is relevant when it comes to this most sensitive area of action, asylum and migration policy making. So we members of parliament give a very important and decisive contribution discussing these issues in order to solve the political stalemates at sight in this area where our citizens want to see solution, the sooner the better, at European Union level. I'm only announcing here that it'll be a minute for Presidente Sassoli del Parlamento Europeo to take the floor. He will be with us for his concluding remarks of this joint parliamentary exercise. It's my pleasure to give the floor to Presidente Sassoli.
Va bene.
Caras e caros colegas, minhas senhoras e meus senhores, meu querido amigo David Sassoli, a declaração do trio, assinada entre a Assembleia da República e os parlamentos da Alemanha e da Eslovénia, tem sido, ao longo do semestre da presidência portuguesa, na sua dimensão parlamentar, e que infelizmente está quase a acabar, a bússola pela qual nos temos guiado. Dar continuidade a esta iniciativa lançada pelo Bundestag e Bundesrat foi desde o início uma prioridade para a Assembleia da República. Cabe-me, por conseguinte, uma palavra de incentivo aos nossos colegas eslovenos, que, animados pelo mesmo espírito, irão assim dar continuidade a esta iniciativa. Sabemos como a temática das migrações é complexa, multidimensional e como, por vezes, as posições dos Estados-membros da matéria nem sempre convergem. Uma razão adicional para manter a temática das migrações na nossa agenda, nada há de mais útil que o diálogo e a troca de ideias para nos compreendermos, sobretudo quando são feitas ao nível dos parlamentos nacionais, que, como se sabe, dão uma imagem mais ilustrativa das forças políticas de cada país do que os governos nacionais, pelo simples facto de nos parlamentos estarem representados em quase todas as opiniões partidárias. A pandemia de Covid-19 trouxe contornos novos e imprevistos às questões da migração e do asilo, sanitários, de direitos fundamentais, de emprego, prestação de serviços essenciais às populações, de acesso aos serviços públicos, de quebra na atividade económica e de impacto nas finanças públicas. Durante os debates realizados, tivemos o privilégio de contar com António Vitorino, diretor-geral da Organização Internacional para as Migrações, o qual, entre outras funções anteriores de grande responsabilidade, foi comissário europeu com funções nesta área tão complexa. Agora, na sua qualidade de diretor-geral de uma organização com vocação universal, António Vitorino proporcionou-nos o ensejo de nos recordar como a pandemia é um fenómeno global e como veio agravar a questão da gestão das migrações e do asilo, ambos fenómenos globais e que tantas vezes assumem dimensão trágica. A terminar, permitam-me igualmente uma palavra renovada de agradecimento aos nossos colegas no trio de presidências, alemães e eslovenos, expressar em meu nome e da Assembleia da República o nosso reconhecimento pelo apoio e cooperação que sempre tivemos ao longo deste semestre da parte do Parlamento Europeu e muito em particular do seu Presidente David Sassoli, a quem eu continuo a dizer que faremos tudo aquilo que ele nos transmitiu diretamente em conferência praticamente privada entre ele e eu, antes do começo da presidência portuguesa, sobre o papel dos Estados Unidos da América e da nova presidência e Joe Biden e do novo e da nova hegemonia sobre o Congresso americano. Hegemonia que espero que seja a favor de todos nós e sobretudo daqueles que mais sofrem neste mundo que já não é bipolar, que já não se sabe o que é, mas que é muito dramático e muito terrível. E que esperamos todos o apoio uns dos outros. A todos, muito obrigado.
Caro Presidente Eduardo Ferro Rodriguez, caro amico, cari colleghi, cari amici delle associazioni, delle organizzazioni, permettetemi di iniziare ringraziando i relatori, i deputati dei Parlamenti nazionali, del Parlamento europeo, Presidente López Aguilar, per la vostra partecipazione a questa conferenza. Sono sicuro che questo ci aiuterà a integrare nel nostro compito legislativo il piano di ciò che dobbiamo fare dopo il Covid per non tornare al mondo di prima e avere regole nuove e dare compiutamente senso a un'idea di umanità e di giustizia. Alla sessione di apertura ho detto di essere convinto che la voce dei Parlamenti è essenziale per il nostro dialogo, per sostenere le attese delle nostre comunità, dei nostri territori. Oggi abbiamo sviluppato alcune idee che potremo adottare per migliorare ulteriormente il nostro lavoro in questo importante settore. Credo che molte esperienze significative siano condivise e che siano stati raggiunti dei buoni risultati che potremo sviluppare come buoni punti di partenza per il lavoro dei prossimi mesi. Il vicepresidente della Commissione Schinas ha detto questa mattina che la pandemia ha acuito alcuni aspetti collegati alla migrazione e all'asilo e soprattutto il loro impatto sulla società, che è diventato più forte e ha ostacolato lo sviluppo delle economie più fragili. Desidero anche menzionare la testimonianza dell'organizzazione non governativa Operazione Colomba, che ha espresso la sensazione di solitudine nell'affrontare questo dramma umanitario. Noi dobbiamo vincere e sconfiggere la solitudine. I Parlamenti oggi hanno appreso l'importanza di affiancare l'azione a alto livello politico e legislativo con la promozione di un dibattito pubblico, una narrazione positiva che riconosca l'arricchimento e i benefici che derivano dalla migrazione. Dobbiamo essere pragmatici e dobbiamo lavorare perché la convenienza di tutti sia posta al più alto livello. È la convenienza che ci può aiutare a cambiare questa situazione, avere regole nuove. La scorsa settimana, prima del G7, ho avuto un lungo colloquio con la Presidente del Congresso americano, Nancy Pelosi, ed è stata lei a chiedere più collaborazione tra i Parlamenti dell'Europa e il Parlamento europeo e il Congresso degli Stati Uniti, proprio sul tema dell'immigrazione e dell'asilo. Certo, sono contesti diversi, ma possono esserci modalità comuni che accompagnano questa sfida e che riguardano tutti i sistemi democratici. Alziamo l'asticella delle sfide, non abbassiamola. Usiamo questo tempo di dolore e di difficoltà per cercare senza tabù delle regole nuove. Sono soddisfatto che la conferenza ad alto livello, in collaborazione con i Parlamenti nazionali e il Parlamento europeo, per rafforzare la cooperazione interistituzionale nel settore dell'immigrazione e asilo, nel rispetto naturalmente di tutte le competenze, dei rispettivi ruoli. E permettetemi di concludere il mio intervento ringraziandovi nuovamente per la partecipazione. Ringrazio i nostri colleghi, i servizi del Parlamento europeo che hanno reso possibile l'organizzazione di questa giornata. Grazie a loro abbiamo potuto scambiare opinioni, valutazioni, idee da tutti gli angoli dell'Unione Europea. Adesso, per finalizzare, vi invito a guardare un momento musicale che è stato realizzato per l'orchestra Gerasau, l'orchestra della generazione, dall'ultimo movimento della quarta sinfonia di Joly Braga Santos. Il direttore è Ulisses Ascanio. Vi ringrazio per l'attenzione e per questa giornata così utile per tutti.